So you're brand new in the United States, escaping Nazi persecution, just reunited with your parents. And can you tell us what then happened?
So they gave me a pink colored passport. It was my name and address, but no letter J on the front. And I had to carry it 24 hours a day. I could not leave the city of Boston for more than 200 miles. Then I got, if I want to go to New York, which in the old days, going through the old Hartford route, that took a long time, that I had to give two letters from American citizens that I'm of good character and I will come back at the appointed time. And then they were also wondering, they came into our house when they did the search, they showed us two books that they took, but they gave them back to me. They were, the first thing is there's a big swastika on the front cover. Well, it was the picture album of the 1936 Olympics. They satisfied themselves that I'm not a spy and I could go home. And then I went to night school at Boston English High School to learn English at night. And my mother's boss had gave us the money. He hired me as an office boy. And it's nice to work with 15 guys and you don't understand when they talk to you because I didn't know any English. But we managed. And then I turned 18 in 1943. I figured I want to be a citizen. I registered in the Army and they assigned me to the medical corps to get my basic training. And then I was told to go to Camp Ritchie, Maryland. But don't tell anybody, it's top secret. Well, I came in my uniform, came to Cambridge, Maryland. I got off the bus. There is a sign with print that says, United States Intelligence Service. And it's supposed to be top secret. Anyway, I came in, I had my... We got acquainted, and then we got our training in camp. The American soldiers in Camp Ritchie were drawn from people who emigrated to the United States, primarily Jewish people. I worked with one individual, and he came from Switzerland. Not Jewish, but he spoke three languages, like every Swiss person does. But it's primarily Jewish refugees that were taken into the camp. The way they trained us is to identify the German army because I would be facing the German army going overseas. Which division did they come from in the German division, and which insignias did they have and all that. And at nighttime at 4 o'clock in the morning, we had what sounded like a million machine guns going off. And we had to identify from which country they came by the sound of the bullets. So at that time, the Italians had the fastest machine gun. I don't know what today. So that's the way they trained us. And then we had our test, purely once a month a test and then a final test, where they gave us a compass reading. And you go through the woods, of course, and suddenly you were being shot at with blank bullets. We had to identify the guns. We had to identify the soldiers that were shooting the guns at us and then reach a tent where they give us a final exam. And then we got 3 hours sleep and we got assignment to go to the next tent. And they had other things that we encountered on the way, so they could ask us who were they in identification. Because once we finally went overseas and I took a prisoner, I saw his insignia and I said, you're from such and such a division. Your general's name is such and such. You were recently on the Russian front. You have left because of major casualties. The firing powers in your artillery are such and such. See, we had all this information, And then the prisoners, in 99% of the cases, they felt at home because we knew more than they did. You know, then we gave them a pack of cigarettes and probably some chocolates and all that and a good meal. And we could get all the information we wanted. And I did a lot of translations. One incident, when we hit the Siegfried Line with all the bunkers, there was one bunker where the soldiers did not want to surrender. But I had found a telephone index. So I called up that bunker and we tried to tell them, you know, you're surrounded. Some of our troops are way past already. It's no sense. They didn't do it. So an American, the commanding officer, what he did, he told the artillery boys to put a couple of cannons in the holes and drive them out. And, so things of that sort. And then also I kept about two maps of the black maps. One is for the American front and one is for the British front and the Germans in the center. So I kept track of it for the commanding general to see how things are moving along the entire front line. So that was also one of my duties. Our final stop before the war officially ended for us, I mean, we were still there doing occupation. We were the first American troops in the Buchenwald concentration camp. Needless to say, you couldn't distinguish between those people that had passed away plus the others, which were still living, but you may as well think they would pass away shortly because, you know, food was not there and treatment and all that. So we made one big mistake. The first thing we did, we gave them food and rations that we had. And that's like giving poison to a person because they were so run down, so little strength to have to, then to eat highly concentrated food caused more problems. After about 3 days, they took us out and they brought in a medical battalion to do it. And we tried to speak to them, the ones that were still alive. We were not very successful. We could tell on their faces that they did not, because we spoke in German. There was another fellow that did a presentation sort of, and he had no results. And he was very upset about it, because as far as the inmates are concerned, they saw another uniform. Otherwise, what difference does it make, you know? He started talking to them in Yiddish. And he was very successful. They opened up and so on. And then gradually they were taken care of by the medical battalion. And as far as we are concerned, everybody knows it. General Patton says, let's go on to Moscow. And thank God Eisenhower said no. So otherwise I probably wouldn't be here today.